Hello and welcome back to the Loyal Sun Show. That's at the Loyal Suns on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, all of the social medias. Follow us here and follow us there for Pitt sports content you will not want to miss. If you love Canadians and hate Matt Canada, this is the place for you. The Loyal Sun Show, a safe, sunshiny place for your Pitt Athletics fix, brought to you by Section 5. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special show for you today. It is the halfway mark of the season, six games behind us, six games ahead of us, which means it is time for the Sunnies, the Sunny Awards for mid-season excellence. I am joined, as always, by Squid and Dylan. Squid and Dylan, how are we feeling today?
I'm feeling good. I'm actually excited for the Sunnies. If we lost this past week, the Sunnies would have been very dismal. I don't know how we could have found any good awards to give out. I think everyone would have gone home empty-handed, or we would have given everyone rocks, like Charlie Brown Halloween style. But we have two wins at the mid-season mark, and that feels amazing somehow.
Yeah. If you would have asked me at the beginning of the year how many wins we would have when we were recording the mid-season Sunnies episode, I would have probably said five, at the very least four. But we're sitting at 2-4, so this will make for an interesting show. But I'm ready to give out some awards here.
Yeah, I'd argue it'd be funnier if we went into this 1-5, because like right now we have like this weird mixture of like insult awards and also like slightly optimistic awards. And I think it would have been funnier if we just went all in with like here's your piece of shit trophy, you troll. Like good game planning, good throwing the football, everything sucks. But we are in a much better mood this week after Pitt kind of disassembled a top 15 team.
Let's just get right into it.
We want to get right into it. Who wants to present the first award?
I'll give it a go. So the first Sunny we're giving out. So disclaimer, not every Sunny is exactly a positive award. In fact, most of these, I would say, aren't because of the season we've had thus far. So the first Sunny we're going to give out is the most head-scratching coaching decision of the first six games of the season. The nominees are starting Phil Dracovic at quarterback for five games, not giving Rodney Hammond the ball, and the entire West Virginia game. Fellas?
Crowded field.
Crowded, but yet I feel that this won't be very divisive in our voting here. I'm going to go with the first nominee, starting Phil for five games. Any objections?
Before this past week, I would have given the entire West Virginia game some serious consideration because we saw a little bit of Christian Veyer and he didn't look great against UNC. And that West Virginia game would be something we come back to for decades and be like, what the absolute fuck was that?
What were they thinking? What happened? What was the conversation leading up to the game? We're not going to let Phil throw the ball. We're just going to go with the Western Michigan game plan.
But as time went on, it was like, wow, what would our record be with legitimately any other quarterback? So starting Phil for as long as we did has to take the cake.
Yeah, the statute of limitations that existed in the last episode where we couldn't speak about the negatives of how clearly better Christian Veyer is at quarterback than Dracovic, that has lapsed, and now we can talk about it. What the fuck, man? They were sitting on this for 6 weeks. They refused, despite all the evidence presented that this was the choice and the only way forward. They still stuck with Phil Dracovic.
I think there's layers to this situation. And we could get really deep into this, but number one, I think you got to look at it. How different is the situation if Frank Stagnetti is not the offensive coordinator? does Phil even end up here if Frank Signetti's the offensive coordinator? But with given their past relationship, I feel like in a way, Signetti kind of made a bet on Phil and he lost. But he brought his guy in, and I'm sure that leash was made a little longer knowing that Frank and Phil were kind of a package deal. And then on top of it, you have the whole transfer portal aspect of it. I'm sure, well, I know that Phil got a pretty penny to come play football here. How much of that factors into when he's allowed to be benched and when he isn't, I don't know. It's the odd world of college football we live in now. And you look at last year, I mean, Keaton Slovis essentially promised the starting quarterback job. I know Narduzzi tried to make it out like him and Patty were in a competition throughout camp, but I think we all know he was always going to be the starter, and I think Phil was always going to be the starter. So they waited till the bye week. Maybe that was the date they had in their mind from the beginning, but I don't know, man. There was a lot that you could watch on film that really makes me wonder how they couldn't have seen this in practice.
Yeah, if you watch Phil's game tape, you know none of this is correctable in a matter of weeks. There is something seriously wrong here. It might not even be correctable if he had another year. So I don't know what Christian Vayer looked like in practice. Maybe he looked really bad and Phil looked okay, and you thought this guy gave us the best chance to win like this week. I don't think there's any way you could have seen that, but I don't care how bad you look in practice. A change needed to be made in some way, shape, or form.
Well, we had
on Saturdays was as bad as Iowa.
You shut your mouth. You mean number 24 in the nation, Iowa? No. We had heard that Vayer was just not taking care of the ball in practice and was kind of a turnover machine, which I understand being hesitant. And then you put him in the UNC game and he's unprepared and he's just trying to make a play, throws two picks. So I understand the hesitation from that perspective if they were worried he may not be an upgrade. But at a certain point, we're dealing with a guy who's gone at the end of the season, a lost season, and then you have two dudes behind him who one of them has to be the future of the program, right? Why would you not test out Vayer and Yurnell?
Or if neither of them, if they clearly aren't, you better figure that out and know that you have to go portal
exactly
again.
You need to figure it out is the point. So right. To hang on as long as they did was very head scratching. And I don't think the excuse that Vayer threw a couple picks in practice is viable, but it probably does add a third layer to the onion that you were chopping up earlier, Dylan.
Are we ready for a happy award now? Get that all off our chest.
Yeah.
Can we move past it now?
No more Phil talk for how long?
Eternity.
Okay.
The rest of the episode?
At least.
Okay.
Maybe. We'll see. Anyway, happy award time. This, Sonny, is for the most pleasant surprise. And we actually have a good amount of candidates here. It could go a number of different ways. Candidate one, Kenny Johnson. Candidate two, Donovan McMillan. Candidate three, Christian Vayer. And candidate four, punter, Caleb Junko. Where do you want to start? Might not be as clear cut as our first award.
I'm torn on this one.
This is a really hard one.
Because, you know, Donovan McMillan has probably been the most productive of this group, although I do think there was some expectation that he would be play meaningful snaps and be a part of the defense this year. Kenny Johnson got a decent amount of hype throughout camp. Wasn't sure how that would come to fruition. Vayer, I mean, right now, I'm very tempted to go and vote for him with just, it's pleasant that we have some optimism moving forward. And then Caleb Junko has just been hitting bombs all season. You know what? My vote, I'm going to give it to Vayer just because I'm pleasantly surprised that in his first start, he took down the number 14 team in the country. Kenny Johnson, close there. I thought I was going to go with him, but I've talked myself into, as of right now, I'm a very in-the-moment voter. I'm going to go with Bayer.
I think that's fair, Dylan. And I think if you framed the award, if you framed the question four different ways, you could get four different answers here. I mean, you're right. McMillan's the most productive. Veer was a big surprise at the most pivotal position. Junko was a pleasant surprise at a position that Pitt, year after year, is terrible at, which was really nice. But I think I need to go with Kenny Johnson, because the way I interpret this is like something that we just didn't see coming. And I was high on him as a recruit. I was high on him coming in, and we did hear rumors that he might be good, but like Pitt desperately needed one of those young receivers to emerge, and they have a straight up guy here, and the flashes he's shown were brilliant. So I'm going to go Kenny Johnson on this one.
I came into this thinking Kenny Johnson was going to be my pick. Looks like a great receiver we have for years to come, but I think the sample size is a little small. He only has 76 receiving yards this year. It feels like he has so much more.
He only has what?
Correct.
I'm seeing 66. Four for 66.
Who says otherwise?
I'm on ESPN. Might need a tiebreaker.
I see 5 for 76 on Yahoo.
I see 4 for 66 on Sports Reference.
Wow, Yahoo crediting Kenny Johnson with an extra catch, it may appear.
Was there one of those like little jet sweeps that was tossed, maybe?
What are they showing as rushing stats? I'm seeing 5 for 31 in rushing.
5 for 31, yeah.
I don't see any rushing yards on here.
That's a lot less than I expected.
So let's toss the Yahoo site to the side, Squid, and change your source of research here.
Well, my source is better than yours, so shouldn't we go with this? It makes him look better.
He's got a point. Irregardless, this is terrible also, radio, so let's get to it.
Also has a punt or kick return touchdown.
True. So. Point being, I think he's going to be great, but I'm going to go with a guy who was probably the reason we won a football game against the number 14 team in the country. I'm going Christian Veer. David, you might not have voted for him because you were already so high on him coming into the season. You were leading his hype train, and I was more on the fence. I was like, hey, this guy played one game and he beat Rutgers. Most guys can do that. But no, he beat Louisville, and most guys cannot do that. He gets my vote. And I guess by 2/3 majority, we give it to Christian Veer.
Not upset about it.
I will give you 10 Loyal Sons points, David, for your early boarding of the Veer train.
Keep in mind, folks, it's not the most important Sunny of the year. We'll do this again at the end of the year, and whoever wins that, they have the real
wins a rights. Car.
Sure.
That's not legally binding. All right. Next Sunny. I'm gonna skip the one that we have like chronologically next so that I can do the one that I really want to do. Best Cignetti game plan. We've talked about it before. Frank Cignetti game plans the way someone who's bad at Madden might run a game of Madden. Mm-hmm. And that is just having like one harebrained idea and sticking to it to death. So the nominees are running the ball every play from the West Virginia game, throwing the ball deep every play from the Cincinnati game, going fast from the Louisville game. Fellas, what do we think? That's a tight crowd.
So it's titled Best Cignetti Game Plan. Is this like the most Cignetti thing he could have done? Or is this the worst game plan that was put together?
Yeah, the it's meant to be ironic.
Right. Right.
So I guess.
So by worst, best, you mean worst.
By best, I do. Yes, that is, I guess, how that works. Yes.
Okay. So that makes it a little bit harder because I was going to pick the only game that we won out of the three.
West Virginia running the ball every play. And not even that running the ball every play is a terrible game plan in and of itself. I mean, yes, it is a terrible game plan in and of itself. It looked good for one drive, but it was so Cignetti that, like, on that first drive, it was like, after about six plays, we're like, oh, they're actually just not going to throw the ball. They will not right. put the ball in the air this drive, and they just refuse to do so. And
right,
they refuse to do so for the rest of the game.
And I think that there's this sliding glass door moment in the West Virginia game that could have dictated, like, I think we could have blown them out when there was a, like, first and three from, or first and goal from the 3 yard line. We had just run the ball about seven times in a row where Cignetti could have had Phil's first pass be the easiest touchdown in the history of the world, get his confidence up, and get the team rolling. But instead, we ran the ball three more times against like an 11-man front. All we had to do was like basically the play that West Virginia scored on later where you do the bootleg with the tight end mirroring you. And maybe Phil's all happy and he's back in the game and he throws a spiral or two. But no. We ran the ball three times because, God damn it, that's what we decided to do.
I am amused. I will say,
be realistic, though. Could you imagine how pissed off we would have been in the stands if they would have thrown the ball in that play and it would have gone incomplete or, God forbid, for an interception? I'm just going to leave you with that thought.
Right, but that's as a play caller, I think you can run a play that mitigates the risk of throwing a pick on first and goal from the three. Like that ball, the ball leaving his hand to hitting a receiver or preferably a tight end, that should not be 9 feet of distance.
One would hope. I will say the game plan that most amused me was the Cincinnati one. Did not expect us to throw the ball as much as we did, let alone throw the ball as deep as often as we did. So I kind of liked it, but after a short amount of time, I'm like, yeah, no, this isn't working. Bub Means has 11 targets and zero completions, so maybe throw those plays out, Frank. I'm going to go with the West Virginia game plan because it was the worst loss I can recall.
The funniest, like, revisionist... not revisionist history, but like the funniest thing to go back on this season. Well, it's not very funny at all, actually, when I think about the game. But going back to the Cincinnati game and remembering that Phil actually threw three touchdown passes on his 10 completions.
That's going to be a real weird fun fact in a couple years.
So we're in agreement here? Backyard brawl? Or did you not cast your vote yet?
I would dissent on the backyard brawl only because like running the ball was kind of working, and I guess when you think about it, letting Phil throw is a worse strategy. I do want to vote for throwing the ball deep every play against Cincinnati because there was a point where we were down one score and like there was 9 minutes left in the game, and instead of like trying to control the game with our very good running back who doesn't ever get the ball, they decided to let Phil throw the ball 20 yards out of bounds on three straight plays, and we forked it over and Cincinnati just sat on it the rest of the game. So I'm gonna vote for that one, but we didn't cover it in the recap and we didn't talk about it now because we won, so it doesn't matter. But against Louisville, the only game plan was just come out and snap the ball with 25 seconds left on the play clock, and it resulted in a 15-yard fumbled center quarterback exchange on the second play of the game. Just nobody on the same page blasted it past Vayer. But I am voting for Cincinnati.
See, I kind of get behind that, David, but I think what makes us the best / worst Cignetti game is after like eight plays, West Virginia knew what we were doing. And Frank Zinetti did not do a single thing to adjust or to zag when they had us figured out. It was just the most stale, uncreative, failed game plan we could have came up with.
I think you could say that for all three of these.
And that's why he will not be winning any awards from us today. Right? We don't have any... Well...
I guess he wins this one.
I guess he kind of won the first one, too. So actually, Cignetti will be leaving with a whole bunch of sunnies.
Wait, so what did... Dylan, you're the tiebreaker. Which one you vote for?
West Virginia.
Okay. I've been defeated again.
On to the best play.
A good one. A positive actual award we're giving out.
The first one, very recent. Christian Vare to Bub Means. The offense needed a spark, and Christian threw a deep strike. A little bit more recent. MJ Devonshire's pick six against Louisville. Third candidate, we have that screen pass to Sebo against Virginia Tech where he got like pushed and spun and broke a bunch of tackles. And it was super wild. And we're like, how the hell did that just happen? Cool play. Fourth, Kenny Johnson's kickoff return. And fifth, any play to Gavin Bartholomew.
So are you leaving out Vare's ice the game touchdown pass?
I think that's got to replace the one to Means.
I read that one wrong off of the notes app.
It was confusing. In your defense.
Yeah, we'll go with a dagger to Bub Means.
Okay.
Mumfield.
Okay.
Yep.
They aren't going to be asking you on stage at the Oscars anytime soon, Squid.
Yeah, that was my Steve Harvey moment.
I'll go first. You got to go the Mumfield touchdown. Right? Like, not... This is a remarkably thin list. And that's the only one that was like an inspiring moment. That inspired hope. And it reminded us of Kenny Pickett. And anything that reminds me of Kenny Pickett, I'm going to vote for.
Yeah, we're halfway through the season. And the candidates are two plays from the game we just won. Two plays from games that we lost in pretty embarrassing fashion, but were slight bright spots in that game, their respective games. And then not even really a play, just anytime they threw the ball to the guy we never throw the ball to. So
good things always happen.
That kind of sums up how this season's looked for the Panthers. I think it's a no-brainer. Vare to Mumfield, it's going to be if and when Maple Marino comes out to be the next great pick quarterback, leads them to a couple 10-win seasons, maybe a future ACC championship. That's going to be the play we look back at, just like the Kenny Pickett bootleg against Miami was. The dagger steps up in the rain, drops his nuts, and just delivers an absolute dime on fourth down. Dagger, take down the number 14 team in the country. MJ's pick six was nice. Plummer kind of threw it directly at his chest, and then MJ Devonshire just played track star and beat everyone to the end zone. Great play. Awesome play by MJ. He had a huge night, but Vare's throw to Mumfield was without a doubt the most promising moment of the season.
Yeah, the research department did not have to do a whole lot of work for this category. I scrolled through some of the box scores. I'm like, I remember most plays from this game, right? I was there. I got to be missing something, right? Nope. Okay. The first play I thought of when I thought of something involving Gavin Bartholomew was that one, like, over-the-shoulder diving catch that was down the one-yard line. That was a sweet play. A lot of cool plays in a vacuum, but when you think about it, it's like, yeah, that was a kickoff return that cut the lead to, like, 14. So that would be embarrassing to give an award for that. So keep up the great work, folks. But I think we're going with Fair to Mumfield.
Love it. Oh, we only have two left, looks like.
Burning through.
Who wants this next one?
I'll do this one because this one might get us in some trouble with some friends of ours. This one is worst social media performance. The first nominee, our good friend Noah Hiles versus the Blue Vase.
The Blue Vase contingent.
Second nominee, Carlo versus Fred Snerd. I'm going to skip the third one because it's actually pretty mean. But the fourth one, Donovan McMillan posting that unnecessary roughness / celebration penalty. I could have worded this one. Donovan McMillan posted a highlight on his Instagram after we got blown out by UNC of that screen pass that went for 20 yards where he jacked the dude, but then got 15 yards for standing over him.
Yeah. One of my least favorite social media genres of social media is players posting highlights in a game they lost and also in a play that actually was very negative for the team. This is in the same light as Jaden Bradley last year against Georgia Tech. About like 3 hours after the game ended, he was posting videos of his touchdowns that came in garbage time in one of the more embarrassing losses in my life as a Pitt fan. So this doesn't quite meet the Jaden Bradley. I think Jaden Bradley may have won this Sunny last year. But yeah, that's got to be it for me.
Yeah, not to compare McMillan to Jaden Bradley at all, because we actually like Donovan. But
and he's good.
And he's good.
And still plays for us because he's, you know what, he still plays for us and still is a contributing member of the football team.
It's pretty impressive that is that who we're picking? Did you both vote for McMillan?
Oh, no, I was going to vote for Noah because it was the funniest to me. And because I think this is one we can laugh at a little bit more because that's our boy. But
okay, I was going to say, if this doesn't, if the winner isn't Fred Snerd, that's impressive because anything involving that guy is an absolute shit show. But I can't with a good conscience give an award to Fred Snerd. I don't want him to know that we're talking about us because that would make his year.
No, you deserve a Sonny.
Yeah, in a way that sparked the turnaround of the season.
I felt really bad for Noah, man. He just noticed the vase for the first time, asked the story, misunderstood the story, and then just spent the rest of the day getting blasted by former players and also Carlo. And Narduzzi's made like 8 or 9 references to it in press conferences since then. And it's just a whole thing now that we are not ever going to escape.
My vote goes to McMillan. I was mad in the stadium, and seeing that just made me more mad. But worthy candidates here. Honorable mention, Chris Dawkish, just at all times, any topic. If you're not blocked by him, let us know what he's up to.
All right. Our final category.
So who won?
Oh, it sounds like 2 votes for the McMillan highlight.
No, I didn't vote for that.
Oh.
I want Noah to have it.
Okay. Perfect.
I can give it to him in person.
Yeah. We're going to meet him out. Yeah.
Okay.
Wait, the trophy for that award should just be a series of ices delivered to him throughout the weekend at times which he will not or he has to drink the ices out of a vase. Can we get a vase by Notre Dame, right?
Yeah, Amazon, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
I have a good vase, guy.
Bezos is worth every penny. All right. On the last award, this has gone on long enough. The safe, sunshiny place that is the Loyal Sun Show. The midseason MVP. You know, it's a 2-4 season. You don't really want to give out too many awards. You know, the guys have shined in certain spots, but overall, it's been a disappointing season. But I don't know. I think there's a pretty clear MVP for this Pitt football team through the first half of the season. You know, we have one win against an FCS team, one win against an FBS team that was ranked 14th in the country. And I think for this most recent win, can only really be attributed to one being. I don't know. Do you guys have any disagreements here?
We're unanimous.
The MVP. The Sonny for the MVP of the first half of the 2023 Pitt football season is the blue vase.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, I think we joked about this before the Louisville game, but now I'm starting to believe that this vase gate, the vase fiasco, could be the rallying cry, the turning point that this Pitt team needed. The disrespect, the public disrespect of the vase has rallied these guys, and now we're going to rattle off seven straight.
I am all for voting for the vase. My vote has been officially submitted. No takebacks, but also an honorable mention, Byron Floyd, Max Chadwick, who works for Pro Football Focus, college football, gave him the midseason All-American award for the long snapper position. He went through every position, and he said that by their analytics, he has zero bad snaps this year.
Knock on wood.
So, good work, Byron, but you do not have supernatural powers that will win us football games like the vase does, so... Congratulations, Vase.
It's not much of a secret that I have a home field apparel problem. Even before we started this show, I couldn't even step foot on a new college campus without making sure there was something from that school's home field collection waiting on my porch when I got home. So we are, understandably, over the moon to partner with Home Field this season to keep Pitt fans comfy, cozy, and stylish at a fraction of the price by using promo code LOYALSUNS for 15% off your next order. This discount applies site-wide, and with unique vintage collections for every school from Pitt to Bama, Jackson State to Colgate, Michigan, Marshall, Marquette, and both Miamis, there's something for every fan. So whether you're buying for a Pitt fan or for a loser freak, use promo code LOYALSUNS at homefieldapparel.com to save big on your next order. Each code applies once per email address, so get those work emails and burners ready. That's homefieldapparel.com.
Now it's time for the Loyal Sun Sportsbook, brought to you by Big Shot Bob's. That's the original Big Shot Bob's in Kennedy and Avalon. Squid, before we get started previewing the Wake Forest game, can you give me a score update on where we stand this season?
Yeah, Dylan, you and I, we did some good work trying to cut into David's lead. We cut the lead to 1, and last week he kind of blew us out of the water. So the season total is David 16. I am at 13. You are at 11. So
got some ground to make up here.
Serves you guys right for doubting Christian Vayer last week.
Whatever. I'll take it. If it means a Pitt win and I drop a few points in this completely...
Totally worth it.
Totally useless game we play on the show, then I'll take it. All right, let's get right into it. Previewing the Wake Forest game. Our first prop here, we've got Number of Christian Bayer completions over 20 air yards. Over 20 air yards. Over under 2.5. Interesting line. I believe David set this one, actually.
Yes, I did. So do you mind if I go first?
Kick it off.
So this one's really specific, but if you saw the way that he was throwing the ball deep last week, it makes sense. I think that this is just going to be a new part of the offense. I know they played throw every ball deep game against Cincinnati, but this one is actually more realistic. If I'm not incorrect, Vayer had 4 such completions last week. His 2 touchdowns, 1 to Kenny Johnson, and I believe the 1 to Bart was also over 20 yards. And I think Cignetti's going to do the thing where we do a thing well, and he's like, all right, now do it 100 times, like run the ball or go fast. So I'm going to go over here. I think Vayer's going to take some shots. I think he throws a beautiful deep ball, and I think we're going to start to see a slightly different offense taking form.
I like it. It all sounds good. I think 3 completions over 20 air yards is a little ambitious here. Made some big throws last week. I don't know if he would have hit this mark last week. He had the deep throw to Bub, deep throw to Kenny Johnson, and then the Mumpfield pass. Were those all over 20 air yards? So maybe.
I believe the one to Gavin. Actually, I can probably check that.
It was 24 yards. He might have rumbled for a few after the catch.
No, I think he went. We'll check the tape. We'll
have to do some analytics on that. I'm going to go under just because, although last week felt good and saw some things out of Bayer, and I'm very excited to see him moving forward, I still have a bad taste in my mouth of how this offense has performed for the whole on this season. So I'd be pleasantly surprised if they're hitting deep balls that consistently this week.
I am also going to go under, but I think it's because we don't have to. Louisville's playing us tough. The short passing game wasn't there. Couldn't run the ball super well. So we needed those big plays to win. Wake Forest defense ain't quite as good as Louisville, so I think we'll be a little bit more methodical. We'll hit our shots here and there, but I'll give us 2, so I'm going under.
All right. 1 over, 2 unders. On to the next one. Sacks by the Pitt defense. The line's set over under 3.5 here. Defensive line this year as a whole has been fairly underwhelming. Not the same disruptive Charlie Partridge defensive line that we've become accustomed to. But Squid, I think you have some stats on the pass protection for Wake Forest. Can you help me out here?
Yeah, they're bad at it. They run that weird, stupid offense where they do like the super long RPO still, so that doesn't help.
The slow mesh.
The slow mesh, yeah. How could I forget? But also, they're allowing 29. They've allowed 29 sacks this season, which they've played 6 games. You do the math, worse than the ACC.
All right.
It's 5 a game if you do numbers.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think, Squid?
I am going to go over. I'm not impressed with the D-line lately, but I think Deion's due for another big game. He's faced this team before. Charlie Partridge has faced this team before, so I think he's going to get those interior guys coached up to have a good game. We'll have a good game plan because, you know, last time we played Wake Forest, started off a little slow, but then we kind of figured it out. So I'm hoping we can take from that, get a lot of sacks.
Yeah. I was torn on this when we first started, but I think I'm going to go over here. I think the defense started to figure something out last week against Louisville. I think that second half, I think we're going to look at that and point to that as kind of one of the turning points. You know, last year down the stretch, Pat Narduzzi defense kind of figures things out, really starts to generate turnovers, generate havoc. And I think that team or that unit's going to rally around. You know what? We shut out the number 14 ranked team in the country in the second half. So I think we're going to rally around that. And I think they do get over that 3.5 mark, whether it's 4, 5, 6. I think they're going to absolutely wreak havoc on the slow mesh.
Make that 3 for 3. I think we go over. I mean, let's face it. The defensive line has underperformed thus far. You know, not to pick on anyone in particular, but sometimes Brema and Temple look like they're just out there exercising. And Day on our hasn't produced as much either. The only one that I feel like really, really excited about is Sam Okunlola, but I think he could be a catalyst. I think you guys hit the nail on the head. They know this offense. They've destroyed this offense in the past. And the second half last week might be the jumping off point. So give me the over. Give me a Temple Brema revenge game. One sack for each of them. And Okunlola is going to make it abundantly clear sooner or later that he is the best pass rusher on this team.
I would like somebody out there to run the numbers on how many sacks have been generated from just a standard four-man pressure, because I feel like our defensive line has not been getting home as much as they usually do. We need to bring the linebackers to get frisky back there and collapse some pockets. So if anybody does that, 50 Loyal Suns points.
Well, 3 of our 4 sacks against Louisville were from linebackers. So that's at least 75% of our sacks were generated by bringing more than 4 guys.
All right. Well, let's get after their ass this week. Next up, Pitt team completion percentage passing the ball over under 50.5%. It should be noted that they've only done this twice this season, which is a sad, sad reality we're living in right now. I'll kick us off. Well, I'm going over. If Pitt's really going to turn this thing around, if Vayer's really going to be the spark this offense needs, and they're going for them to look like a real offense, they've got to do this sooner or later. And I think a second game under center, he's not playing in the rain. He's not against the 14th ranked team in the country. Just another year or another week getting timing down with these receivers. I do expect him to be a bit more accurate than he was this past week. And I mean, even if you go 16 for 31, that's still over 50%. So
I'm also going to go over. I think Christian got the jitters out of the way early last week, not his first start. Saw how bad the short routes were last game, so I'm hoping Cignetti's got him working on that all week. So I'm going over, and I'm hoping it's Christian Vayer the whole game. I know we have the team completion percentage. I hope he is the starter for the whole game.
Yeah, that was kind of the built-in wrinkle there. You know, there's a couple different ways you could go with that. You know, what if something happens to Vayer or he looks bad and we have to see Yarnell or Dracovic?
Well. If he's playing poorly, there's no way they bench him for Dracovic.
Well, he's third on the depth chart now.
Right.
Stranger things have happened. I don't know. I'm also going to go over the entire point of this. This prop was just to point out the fact that we have only gone over 50% completion in 2 games. And one of the 2 games was like close, like really close. So I think that this week is going to be a sign that the dog days are behind us. I think that Vayer is going to show up and show out. And he's going to complete at least 55% of his passes.
Wow, alternate line.
Pinpoint accuracy.
Cashing it.
Okay. We've got one more prop before the first touchdown score and spread. Combined touches for Rodney Hammond and Gavin Bartholomew, over or under 16.5. Can't believe we have to set it this low. I don't know. Who wants to start with this one? I'm just getting pissed
off. I'll start. I feel like you two might be a little bit optimistic, and I think David's going to be beating the drum for Hammond after last week. So I'm going to go under. I think we're going to sit right about 16, 15. We're going to get a dozen Hammond rushes and 3 or 4 Gavin Bartholomew receptions. That's who we are. I don't think anything's going to change drastically. I would love it to be a little bit more. I always talk myself into thinking maybe this week we have a good matchup and we'll just run the ball a lot more effectively. Hammond will look good early. We'll ride him the whole game. We'll have like 20 carries for 115 yards. I don't think that's who we are. We got a young O-line. Give me under.
Well, last week, if for those keeping score at home, this number would have come out to 14. 11 carries for Rodney Hammond, as well as a catch for 8 yards, and then 2 catches for 33 yards for Gavin. I'm going over. Optimism. Hoping they get him the ball. Hoping Vayer, second week, needs his little his safety valve of a tight end, throws him the ball 5-6 times. And maybe just sound like I'm on crazy pills at this point, but please go over on this week.
You know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. So by that metric, Dylan, you are insane. I'm going to go under. One, I'm not going to believe that they're going to get their two best offensive weapons involved until they actually do it. And two, Hammond was looking a little banged up last week. It wouldn't
surprise me. He also fumbled in a play. And you know how coaches are whenever a guy fumbles. There was a play. He fumbled at the very, very tail end of it and picked it up, but you know Narduzzi saw and was like, oh no, you're done.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's two factors that point to another SIBO Flemister game. Although the one positive spin I'll put on this is SIBO's solid, but you know what you're getting with him. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some other running backs start to get a couple touches this week. Give me some Derek Davis, some TJ Harvison, some Wait, no, I didn't mean TJ Harvison. I'm blanking Lloyd. On the... Sorry?
Montrevious Lloyd.
Yes, that's who I meant. Montrevious Lloyd. You know, see what they can do. But I'm going under.
I hope not. All right. First touchdown score. What direction you guys want to go?
How are we doing the points? Is it still... Two for anybody?
Two for anyone at this point.
What about the defense?
Ooh, 5.
Okay.
I'll go first. I'm taking our new goal line back, SIBO.
Give me Mr. Mumpfield. I think him and Vayer found a little something on that last play, and he's going to want to go back to him early and often.
I will take the defense / special teams, because if this line is that bad, this Wake Forest offensive line, I could see us giving them some real trouble. And, you know, whether that results in a Sam Hartman-esque terrible pass into the flat for a walk-in touchdown or just a good old-fashioned scoop and score, I could see it happening. Maybe we'll start this one like the Virginia game.
Well, last but not least, we've got the spread / score prediction. As of right now, we're recording this Tuesday night. It's Tuesday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can't keep my days straight. Tuesday night. Right now, Wake is favored by 1.5. So we're 1.5 road dogs, road warriors. I feel like there's some value there. I don't want to get ahead of myself. And I'm not going to bet on them because I'm mush. But I do feel like there's some value here in the Panthers. Anyone want to get us started?
Yeah, I'll go. Guys, I actually feel good this week. I feel good going into this game for the first time since Cincinnati. Wake Forest is really bad. I do not understand the current line at all. FPI gives us like a 55 or 60% chance of winning. I think that the team that I saw last week should beat the hell out of Wake Forest. I think we are going to see some really promising stuff from Christian Vayer and the offense, because when you're playing a top 15 team, regardless of if it's your first start or not, when you are an inferior opponent playing a top 15 team, you play with a bit of a stick up your ass. And so for that reason, I think that this is going to be kind of a get right game, because that was not a normal first start for Christian Vayer, and he looked great. He showed flashes, but I think that this is the first chance to get him like in a true rhythm, play a little bit more loose, a little bit more relaxed. And, you know, so there'll be some mistakes, but also some real moments of brilliance. But I think that we should be able to floor this team. So I have Pitt covering. I have Pitt winning 31-17.
Squid, you want it? You want me to take it?
I'll go because I have a very similar score to David. Pitt coming off of a ranked win, new quarterback. The defense got its mojo in the second half there. So I think things are all trending positively for Pitt. Wake Forest, their quarterback, got benched earlier in the season. And now is being, earlier in the season, last game, new guy came in, looked good, got hurt. Old guy's back. So they don't feel great about their quarterback. They just kind of got curb stomped by Virginia Tech. I think we can out-physical them again. Although their offense does scare me, I think we're going to have some miscues. So I think it's a high-scoring affair. Pitt wins 31-27.
Yeah, I think Wake Forest is pretty bad. Who would think that this is where these two teams would be just 2 years after meeting in the ACC title game? Wake Forest has scored 2 offensive touchdowns in the past 3 weeks. They've scored 0 offensive touchdowns in the first quarter of the last 3 games. In the first 3 quarters of the past 3 games. Shout out to NFL Gimpy on Twitter for that stat. Pitt's defense, like I said, I think they're going to be rolling. I think they're going to really start to turn it on here in the second half of the season. I think Vayer is going to put this offense in a position to actually move the ball consistently, put points on the board. I think this is a game Pitt absolutely has to win. If they lose, I will be back to having zero hope whatsoever. We'll be staring down the barrel at Notre Dame and Florida State. So if you lose this one, you're probably staring at 2-7. That being said, I do not think Pitt loses this one. I think they're going to start to build some momentum here, get their first winning streak of the season. I think the Panthers, although it won't look sharp from start to finish, I think they win this one fairly comfortably. 27-17, Pitt takes down the Wake Forest Demon Deacons on the road. And we all picked them to win, so we all picked them to cover. So some money line value there for those who want to bet it. I won't. I'll stay away.
Please win. This week's final thought is brought to you, as always, by Guerrero Law. Dylan, what was the best and worst thing to happen to you this week?
I'd have to say the best thing was Pitt beating Louisville. And the worst thing, probably waking up with a crippling hangover after that wedding Sunday morning.
Wow. What a high and a low. You see, Dylan, life is full of highs and lows. Sometimes you're watching LaVance Fields hit a step back three against Duke. Sometimes you find yourself, you know, on the highway getting into an accident. Well, if you find yourself in a situation where maybe you get hurt and your insurance company isn't treating you fairly, or other law firms won't take your case seriously, you need to reach out to Guido at Guerrero Law. He will turn your losses into an ACC championship caliber win. That's GuerreroLaw.com to reach out to Guido, GuerreroLaw.com. You can also call him at 412-229-7757. He's licensed in PA and Ohio, based here in Pittsburgh. All right. Final thought. And that is not a misnomer. We have one final thought today, and that is we wanted to talk a little bit about how the college football playoff race is shaping up. You know, it's halfway through the season, and, you know, there's a picture forming. And while Pitt may or may not be participating in it, we wanted to, you know, kick around some thoughts on it. So does anyone want to start?
I wish I trusted my gut about Washington earlier. I think I was biased because of how bad Michael Penix was at his tail end of his Indiana career. And I didn't want to fully buy him, but I'm like, man, they're kind of cool. And now I think they are my personal favorite to win the college football playoff, despite having quite a gauntlet ahead of them.
Wow.
My quick input on it is, I need Ohio State to beat Penn State this weekend, because if Penn State makes the playoff in our down year, I won't survive it. And also, like, they'll have another showdown with Michigan, but other than that, like, it's a cakewalk. So Ohio State needs to figure it out this weekend and just win that game.
Yeah, I would do a lot for Penn State to have another patented 0-2 against the only two good teams in our conference season.
Yeah, this season could end up being worst case Ontario, with Pitt playing the way Pitt's playing and Penn State's schedule lining up the way it is. But I have another fear, not greater than that, but still a fear. This year feels like an unprecedented opportunity for newcomers. Like, the top of the SEC is weaker than usual. The top of the Big Ten is weaker than usual. Georgia looks vulnerable. Bama's vulnerable. Ohio State looks vulnerable. Michigan, we don't know because they haven't played a single functional team yet. So it feels like this is the chance for a Washington, a Florida State, I mean, there's like five random Pac-12 teams that could sneak in, Texas or Oklahoma. Hell, you could have sold me on Louisville until last week, but I'm also worried that the Big 12, ACC, and Pac-12 are also well on the way to cannibalizing themselves enough that even though the ACC or the SEC and the Big 10 kind of suck this year, we could still end up with 2-2 in the playoff.
I don't think so, because I was listening to this on a podcast earlier and I almost drove off the bridge I was on. Iowa is almost a lock to make the Big Ten championship. Their schedule is so bad. And they're also, like, bad. So I think Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State will cannibalize each other. One of them will face Iowa. And then tough squash. Iowa making the Big Ten championship and averaging, like, 14 points a game is going to be hilarious, though.
See, but that's what I'm worried about, because, like, let's say Michigan runs the table. The winner of the Penn State-Ohio State game is going to be a one-loss team and still get into the playoff, even if they don't make the Big Ten championship game.
I don't know if they'll do that again. There's going to be a one-loss team in the Pac-12 that is going to have a much better resume than them.
I don't know. They might cannibalize again. Washington's the only undefeated remaining. they love to beat the hell out of each other. USC blew it against Notre Dame. Washington knocked off Oregon. Now watch, like, Oregon State or Washington State are going to beat Washington, and that's going to be all she wrote.
But ACC gets two teams in. My prediction.
My prediction is Pitt will be the first four-loss team to make the playoff.
It's a shame we had to play spoiler yet again and take Louisville out of potential contention.
That was a hilarious conversation in the stands. I don't know if it was the second or third quarter, whenever the barrage of pass interferences were coming in, all the fans were like realizing it at once. It's like, oh, yep, that's right. We're facing a 6-0 ACC team. The call came in from headquarters. You got to get this team a win. We can't let this one win team ruin their season.
They aren't Tobacco Road, but they are south of Dixie.
Mm-hmm.
Squid, do you own a lamp?
Yeah, it's right above me.
At the previous angle, now it's different. It was literally like just you. Like you were on just a black background. Like it was a green screen of nothing.
You have the same lighting as Paranormal Activity right now.
I'll get a night vision camera for next episode.
So before we adjourn or continue to make fun of Squid for just not buying like a ring light or something, can I get a 14 playoff prediction from the two of you? I'm gonna nail you to the floor on it.
I'm gonna need like 7 seconds.
Yeah. Give me. Well, let me give you the top four, the simulated BCS rankings. I saw this posted earlier today. The top four in the simulated BCS rankings are 1, Michigan, 2, Ohio State, 3, Georgia, 4, Florida State.
That would be the most boring possible outcome other than Alabama figuring it out down the stretch and making it in.
Well, this is just for this week. Like, this is what the BCS rankings would have spit out this week as their rankings. I digress. Top four, give me. I'm going to go Georgia, Florida State, Ohio State, Washington. Four separate conferences represented. We've got our one or two. Florida State hasn't been in a while. Washington's made a playoff before. So no absolute newcomers to the playoff, but at least a little bit of parity compared to what we've seen.
I'm going to go Georgia gets in as the four. I think they lose the SEC championship game, but they still make it because their pedigree and what they've done in years past. I think Texas gets in. I also have a future on them making the playoffs, so I would like that to happen.
Gotcha.
I also have a future on Ohio State not making the playoff, but I think they're going to make the playoff, and I'm going to lose that bet. And Florida State. Their receivers are so good. That's going to be scary in a couple weeks.
Give me Georgia, Michigan, Washington, and UNC in that order.
I didn't say Washington. Sorry, Texas, you're out.
UNC, Drake May, leads the Tar Heels of the playoff.
It's taking everything in me to not make the Pac-12 a two-bid school or a two-bid conference and make it like Washington and Oregon or like someone really freaky sneaking their way in like UCLA.
No, I want Oregon State to make it.
Would be cool.
Would, because they're Beavers.
Yeah. All right, Dylan, get us out of here.
Fellas. Well, we have a chance to have our first win streak of the season. Heading down to Winston-Salem, take on the Wake Forest Demon Deacons. Let's go kick their heads off. As always, hail, loyal sons of Pittsburgh. Please win.